Hello, everybody, and welcome to Opposite Sides of the Couch. You're hearing this episode, hopefully, because you're backing the Two-Headed Girl Patreon. Thank you so much for doing that. And especially thank you to Quinn Rose, who is joining us today. Hooray!
Hello, thank you for having me. Again.
Quinn, in case people rage quit over something I say, where will people be able to find you on the internet?
Wow, what a way to set up that question. You can find me usually on Twitter at AspiringRobotFM, and I make other podcasts, but you can find them on my Twitter, so just go there, it's fine.
Well, though, you do have a new one, I'm told.
Oh, I have a new podcast about the Muppet movies, and it's very wholesome, and it's just me and Stephen Hackett once a month talking about a Muppet movie, and it's been really fun. So if you like the Muppets, check it out. It's called Bear Left, Right Frog.
Giggle every time I hear it. Well, we have joined together today to talk about my new favorite show and really my new favorite queer show, Schitt's Creek, which just ended this April.
Yay. I mean, not yay that it ended, yay that we're talking about it.
I'm very excited. My notes are called Capitalism in Canada.
Oh, dear.
Schitt's Creek is this lovely little Canadian show that I would classify as a dramedy, although on Wikipedia, it's listed as a sitcom, which I don't think is quite right.
Disagree.
It is created by Dan and Eugene Levy, and it started in January 13th, 2015, and just ended this April. It has six seasons, and the basic plot is this wealthy family loses all their money, and they have to move to this really small town called Schitt's Creek that Johnny, the father of the family, bought for his son as his son David as a joke, and they must get used to living there all together, the mom, dad, and their two adult children in a motel, basically in two motel rooms in a tiny little rural town and with no money.
Initially, I was reluctant to watch the show, I think, because I thought it would just be a Canadian Arrested Development type of thing, because it's like, all right, a rich family gets into some illegal financial trouble and then goes off into quote unquote poverty. But that's definitely not what it is at its core. And we'll get into that. But Quinn, when did you learn about this show or start watching this show? Because I don't know, hearing 2015, I'm like, oh yeah, that's like another era.
Yeah, I actually didn't start watching this until early 2019, because I remember the fifth season was airing while I was watching it. And I had just heard about it from a lot of people. It was pretty under the radar for a few years, and then it started picking up a lot of steam around the fifth season. And I just heard so many people tell me that they loved it that I was like, great, sure, I like shows. So I started watching, and then I had what I think is a very common experience that a lot of people have, which is that I started watching it and I liked it well enough for the first season and a half or so, but I didn't really understand why people loved it the way that they were telling me they loved it. And then somewhere in the second season, and especially by the end of the season, it just clicked and I was like, well, I would die for anyone in this show now.
Yep. Same here. I was like, okay, this is a funny show. I really like this clearly queer character, David, or rather, I assumed immediately, perhaps wrongly, which we'll get to that, this gay kid, what? But he's really like, what, 35? And his obnoxious sister, all right, fine, I guess this is funny, but it's not the best thing ever. And it was like a fucking bait and switch, because I ended up crying. Not during every episode. I would say like every three or so after the second season. And it's hard to pinpoint where exactly you decide, yep, I am going to definitely murder if anybody hurts Catherine O'Hara. And it's really, really brilliant. And that's part of why I wanted to talk about it, and not just because of the queer representation within the show.
Well, we started watching it like a month ago and watched all of it in July. And after every episode in the first season, Alex would turn and look at me and be like, it's so wholesome. And like literally every episode in the first season. And by then we were both like hooked. The first season's a little rough, but after that it was like, yes, of course.
But you should add an inflection to that, really, because I'm like, it's so wholesome? Because again, I expected Arrested Development. And again, like it was so wholesome, and it's not a show that punches down. And I mean, yeah, I think we should just get right into spoilers. And
yes, definitely there will be spoilers. Go watch it all on Netflix before you listen to this if you haven't.
Well, you can't really buy it. I suppose you can buy it on iTunes. That's the problem with Canadian TV shows, is I never quite know how to support them. Wynonna Earp and Orphan Black. I'm like, I don't know how you're staying on the air so long. It must have something to do with your government actually caring about the arts, but I don't really know how that all shakes out. Which is why I think it's funny that your notes are titled what? Capitalism in Canada?
Yes.
I was worried because I'm like, is the whole show just going to be this family trying to get back its fortune? Which, it kind of is, but not really. It's a show about very strange and beautiful humans and adapting and growing together. And you're like, well, that's like every show, but no, that's actually how it is. I don't know. What were your initial impressions, Quinn, about how it was made and like the choices that were going on? It's just, it's the most un-American show, and I mean it in a good way, because it really... Yeah, the plot focus, the plot's conceived around money, but that sort of dropped very early as a pretense.
Yeah, I think that the show is very ambitious, ambitious in a way that you don't see immediately, because it is set up to have like this really in-depth slow burn character development, where it does start out like seeming like it's going to be Arrested Development kind of, but it's set up like that because eventually the characters do become good people and likable people, which they aren't in the first episode, in the very beginning of the show. And it's very interesting to watch, like, And they take the time to actually slowly develop it for that to make sense. It's not just like they flip a switch and they're like, oh, they're nice now or whatever. But the way that they are able to maintain character while making them actually likable and not just obsessed with the idea of getting out of the town. Because I think the first season is really propelled by that idea way more than the rest of the show.
For sure.
Which I also think is, in addition to like all TV shows, like often having to find their footing in the first season a little bit, I think is a big reason why that one falls a little flatter than the later seasons. But yeah, it's a driving force that works to set up the show. But I also think that they use it really effectively, always focused on character development. Like I think of the episode in which Johnny has to get unemployment money. And that's a really big early moment for his character and his marriage and them figuring that out, and you getting to see like more into their marriage beyond the sort of comedic aspect of the show of like, oh, haha, they're rich and now they're not, and now they need to get this big out again. But it's like, no, what is the actual day-to-day of that? What does that do to them as people? How are they growing closer together because of what they're going through? And I like seeing how that develops like literally episode to episode.
I had totally forgotten about the filing for unemployment scene or entire episode, really. And again, I assumed it would be like, how much could a banana cost? $20? Lucille Bluth. But no, Johnny Rose is clueless, but then actually takes the time to learn about why it's hard and like the injustices involved. I mean, it doesn't get heavy, but you know, there's that, you know, slow wheel that begins to turn with character development. And it was another, I think that was sort of a pivotal thing where I just kind of cocked my head again and was like, wholesome? And again, Canadian?
I think it's because, like, all of the characters deep down are good people, whereas if we're going to keep comparing it to Arrested Development, all of the characters in that show are not good people.
Which is why it's a good show.
Right. It's very different in its characterization, but, like, on purpose, because everything is... I've been watching a lot of interviews since now this show is my new obsession, and... Dan Levy says, like, every characterization and, like, all the plot points were, like, really thought out beforehand. Like, he had a book on each character and, like, how they would grow and change.
And that really shows. And I also think, just on the note of the money part of it, too, they don't get super into the backgrounds of the parents, but I think that they allude to it a few points that they didn't come from money. They both, like, Johnny Rose built this video store empire, and Moira got rich through acting and also like by marrying Johnny, who had this empire. But even though they've been like super wealthy for however many years, they weren't raised that way. And so there is an interesting contrast as well, as like them having a different perspective on going back to having no money. Johnny was sort of a more like, let's dig our heels in, and Moira having a little bit more panic about it, versus the kids who like have known nothing but obscene wealth their entire lives and like don't even know how to deal with it, which they pull a lot more comedy from. But it's I feel like that they set up like these three different sort of sets of reactions to it that plays well against each other as well.
Yeah, I never thought about that, how like, it just never dawned on me that Johnny's wealth was self-made. Like, I don't know why I didn't think about that, but...
And they don't go into detail of, like, their specific upbringings, but it's... I think it's, like, safe to say that they weren't raised as wealthy as they were in adulthood, so they do have, like, coming from different places than their kids were.
And I think it's a really good point that you made, that they kind of allude to that, because a lot of their quirkiness isn't just because, haha, now they're poor. It's like they're total weirdos who happen in the best way, who ended up with all of this wealth. And there are a lot of comedic moments, I think, in the first season, but which is, again, why I was hesitant. But then you realize that, oh, there's way more to them, because Moira just isn't just this mom of the family isn't just a rich actress or like a trophy wife. No, she was on a soap opera, and she cares deeply about her craft and is a singer. And the other reason I, you know, Johnny Rose, I'm like, oh, he's very much a as an American character, when I mean, I didn't know he was Canadian I didn't know this show was supposed to take place in Canada. When I started watching it, I was like really skeptical of this man who wants to get back in the business game. And in America right now, July 31st, 2020, some people might be a little skeptical about capitalism, and but you're like, oh no, this person, Johnny, who is honestly less of a patriarchal character and more of a leader in sort of like the literal sense, like he's the dad, but his leadership doesn't come from like being a dad. They're two very separate things. as the show continues, it's almost like they go off. Each character kind of has their own branch, and that's because they don't have this thing in common, which is their wealth. And you see how they can grow as a family even without, like, the fancy Christmas parties and pianos. Oh, the Christmas episode. Oh, God. Should we actually talk about the gay shit?
I was just going to say that. I was like, can we get into the gay now? Enough capitalism. Let's be real.
Yeah.
Quinn, what's your favorite episode?
Oh, my gosh. I wasn't prepared for that question.
Yeah, okay. Wow. I'm not prepared for if you were to ask me that question. Oh.
I have a couple episodes that I definitely have returned to, like, over and over again, because I had to wait for a long time between season 5 and season 6, and I felt that wait. So I did rewatch a bunch of the show. I think I actually, now I think of it, I did rewatch the whole show, but also a couple episodes several times. And definitely the episode where they have the open mic and Patrick serenades David is definitely one I've returned to. The episode where Patrick comes out to his parents makes me feel everything.
I asked because I knew you would pick two of the best queer episodes, which is why I threw you the question.
Yeah, honestly, just every episode where Patrick and David have a relationship milestone is like one I want to return to, because I love Patrick. I would die for him. And I just want him to be happy.
Patrick and David's relationship is so pure and so perfect. And I love that. Again, I've been listening to and watching a lot of interviews, and I love that the point of the town is that there's no homophobia or bigotry. It's just like accepted that they're gay and it's not a big deal. And they can just be in, like, a regular-ass relationship. And it's almost like this little, like, utopia that I would want to move to. And that's why I think the show, we devoured it in, like, a month, because it's been a great escape from what's happening in the world, so.
It's one of those shows that you can just trust, because you know that no matter what happens, like, no one's going to turn around and be homophobic to someone or be just an awful person. Like, it's just, it, all of the fun and comedy and drama of it comes from just, like, good people trying to do good things and getting into goofy situations. Like, nothing is that intense or high stakes about it in that way.
And none of the main gays are going to get rejected or killed like in most shows.
Nope.
There are also so few, like, gay plot points. Like, those relationship milestones are played out the same way that the, like, straight, you know, like, Dave, I don't know, we keep calling David gay, but as we know, he is super de-duper not, or rather, like, gay in the binary sense of, I remember that I can swear on this show because it's our show and not, like, The Incomparable or something. So I can say, like, penis in the butt stuff. But
you don't have to.
I'm sorry.
Just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Exactly.
Well, I did control myself when I almost compared this show to that was like, oh, it's like a sci-fi show. Oh wait, no, it's just in Canada, and because then it made me sad, and now I've made everybody sad. Unless you're in Canada, thank you for listening. I hope you're doing well, and I hope you don't run into any Americans and you get sick.
Anyway. Wait, can we focus and finish your thought about how the gay relationship milestones are treated the same as the straight relationship milestones, like between the sister Alexis and Ted? The starts out as a kind of goofy nerdy vet and turns into a sexy bad boy vet.
Yeah, we started calling him Canadian America, or no, Captain Canada. Wait,
Captain,
what's
Canada?
It?
Yeah,
yeah.
Oh my god, that makes sense. He's a beautiful man.
He just came back, and I'm like, oh, you're Chris Evans after the surgery or whatever happened in Captain America. But I honestly like the straight relationship with David's sister, Alexis Rose, and Ted, Captain Canada, is almost like more dramatic than David and Patrick's relationship. And I can't think of another show where there's more drama in the straight relationship. That is wild and incredibly refreshing.
Well, that's because Alexis is so extra. Let's be real.
Yeah.
Oh, like David's not extra.
Well, let's get into David, who is probably now one of my favorite characters on television ever. Like, David Rose is possibly one of the best portrayals of a queer person on TV with fluid sexuality.
So, just to be clear, I'm a red wine drinker.
That's fine.
Okay, cool. But I only drink red wine.
Okay.
And up until last night, I was under the impression that you too only drank red wine. But I guess I was wrong.
I see where you're going with this. I do drink red wine, but I also drink white wine.
Oh.
And I've been known to sample the occasional rosé. And a couple summers back, I tried a Merlot that used to be a Chardonnay, which got a bit complicated.
Okay, yeah, so you're just really open to all wines.
I like the wine and not the label. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
Anyway, now that we have definitely all heard that clip and I didn't keep talking or anything. Because he talks about his sexuality in such vague terms, is amazing. Like the line of, I care about the wine more than the label, I guess, is like mind blowing to me. Because if people have listened to the main episode of main show, Two-Headed Girl, you know that that's kind of how I feel about my own sexuality, because it's like, I don't know, it's whatever like Merlot or rosé that is around, and he really doesn't overthink it. And that was something I've literally never seen on TV before. And it also was, it was played for laughs, but not because it's like, haha, David's queer and has fucked a bunch of people. But it is super funny that he's like, he was a total, he was very much me, like a total queer slut trying to figure things out, and it's beautiful. But in that moment, it's like this silly dude explaining his sexuality to his pal, and that's like not the butt of the joke. The butt of the joke is he's a weird eccentric guy, and I'm thinking about it right now and just feeling all of these wholesome butterflies of how many people watched that and were like, oh yeah, cool. And also, oh fuck yeah, that's me. Because as a 30-year-old seeing someone on TV and saying, fuck yeah, that's me, was very strange and refreshing.
Well, it's funny in that moment as well, because he's explaining it to his friend Stevie, who's just found out that David's not gay by sleeping with him, which is such a funny way to find out that someone's not gay.
Mm-hmm.
She was just like, oh, okay, I need to get more details on this later, I guess. But I find that episode very interesting in the way that, because he has this, what has become pretty iconic to his character, this explanation of his sexuality through wine. And then in a different scene in that episode, Johnny tells another character that David is pansexual. And I found all this very interesting for two reasons. One, that they actually use the word pansexual, which is like, as we talked about on the bi representation episode, not super common to actually use words, which I thought was very cool that they did that. And I could tell that that was something that was important to Dan Levy making the show, to actually like put a label on it. But I also find it interesting that David doesn't identify himself as pansexual, which, and he doesn't, I don't think they ever come back to that again. which I think it's like left open, very open to interpretation. One is that, like, just in the context of the conversation, using the wine analogy to fully explain himself made more sense to him, and maybe he does personally identify as pansexual, but it just, like, it never comes up again, because why would it? This town exists outside of homophobia. Or, like, maybe he doesn't use the word pansexual super often, but, like, that's how it made the most sense to explain himself to his parents, and that's the conversation yep. that he had with his parents to, like, help them understand in more concrete terms. And I find it very interesting that you can relate to it on different levels, and they leave it open for the viewer to interpret it how they want it to.
Yeah, and there's that really great scene where you mentioned where Johnny is talking, he's talking to the mayor of the town, Roland, and he's like, he's saying something along the lines of that he doesn't care that David is pansexual, he just wanted and wants him to have, like, an easy life.
Yeah.
That, like, you know, we say that the show is existing outside of reality, which it does.
Outside of homophobia, like, not reality.
Well, I also think it exists outside of reality, because capitalism is, like, almost good in this show, but that means it's not capitalism. Anyway, Johnny says, I just want David to be happy, and this might be, I think he even says, like, you know, is it wrong that I just wanted him to have an easy life? And that is very much how my dad kind of expressed how he felt towards me. And I used words like lesbian with my parents because it was just easier. Like, I was like, yeah, this is, you know what this is. Like, Rosie O'Donnell, like, you can relate to that? Cool. Let's just roll with this. And that's, like you said, Quinn, it's really never brought up again, because why would it? Because it'd be fucking weird to live, well, for me, at least anyway, it'd be weird if I talked about my sexuality every time Maddie and I went over to my parents' house. Like, we don't have discussions, or at least long discussions, about gender and sexuality when we're just like, all right, it's time to play Quiplash and see if there's anything new going on our gender spectrums. And it was another wholesome moment for me. And the times then later that Johnny and Moira talk or reflect on David's relationships in the future, they talk about, like, his problems in the past, or, like, you know, in a paternal way, not like, oh, remember when he boinked this dude or anything like that. They definitely talk about the same way they talk about Alexis, who we kind of presume, and it's implied that she's straight. At least she only dates dudes on this show. And it really reminded me of my parents in a really good way. So, I don't know. I've really never seen that on TV before. And I can't believe I'm saying this, I don't think supportive parents of queer kids get a good rap on TV. Like, usually there's, like, a big fallout and then parents come around. But this was just like, yeah, it's this thing. And life moves on to Rose Apothecary.
Apothecary.
Matthew, please. Words here mean nothing in this show. They can be said however they want. Champagne.
Should we talk about Ronnie before I forget? Because I don't want to forget about her.
Yes, please.
There's this episode, and of course I don't have the title pulled up, where Moira thinks she's giving a pitch to get votes for town council to a group of lesbians, and it turns out that they're all business enthusiasts in the town and not lesbians. I mean, they are lesbians, but that's not the main reason for the group of people getting together. And I just thought it's very cute how any question that comes up about sexuality, they just kind of, like, don't get hung up on it. And it's just like, oh, that's not actually what this is about? Okay, and move on. And I think that it's great how no one ever makes a big deal about Ronnie's sexuality. It's just like, yep, she dates women. That's all. I mean, we assume she's gay. I assume. So.
Well, because in the episode, I think Ronnie says something like, I can gather a key demographic for you.
Yeah.
And and Moira's like, ah, the lesbians. And then, yeah, it's all women entrepreneurs, which she doesn't realize until like seconds before she's supposed to give the speech that she's written about lesbian rights. Yeah.
It's beautiful. And
that's another example of humor in the show that is about queer people, but it's not at the expense of queer people, which is really fun.
I have the really problematic opinion of I just think gay jokes are awesome. They just need to be funny and not mean. Like, that's the joke isn't like, oh, look at all these butch lesbians. It's because Moira pulled a Moira, and if you've seen the show, you know what I mean. Like, we also don't know in the show even that Ronnie is a business owner. Like, that becomes part of her character later, but it's a slow burn. We actually have time to get to know these characters, and her sexuality isn't explicitly talked about, but they do towards the very end of the, oh, it's the final episode where she's like, oh, don't worry, they need to get flowers, and she's like, don't worry, I know the florist, and it's like, no, but we need flowers now, and she's like, I know her. And like, and it's not like, oh, Ronnie's a lesbian, it's just Ronnie is this quirky character who like holds is like a private person, but also isn't ashamed of herself. Does that make sense? I guess, like, because she's if you looked at her, you would think lesbian. But she doesn't really talk about her sexuality or her business or like personal life, which is why Moira made that mistake. But again, because Moira was being a bit of a ding-a-ling.
Well, in the later seasons, whenever they're building David's store, she's in construction, Ronnie, because
right.
She builds their bathroom. So,
oh my god, I didn't even think about, like, of course she's a lesbian in construction.
Lesbian in flannel with a tool belt. Yeah, exactly.
I literally didn't even think of that until now, because like, this show leans into the stereotypes that are true and are like, no, it's not bad that David's flamboyant. Like, that's, no, like, it's his eccentric clothing is delightful and typical of, like, I don't know. It's like, yes, he has a lot of really effeminate traits and they should be celebrated, and he as the character celebrates them, and I hope, at least, and from what, and Matt, from what you've said about some of the interviews you've read and watched, it seems like the human being of Dan Levy wanted that to be part of it. Like, David is all in with how he is presented.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, and they do make fun of some of his clothing choices on this show, which is always funny because sometimes they are truly ridiculous. It's never like, oh, this man is wearing something effeminate, that's funny. No, it's just like, hey, David, that's a really ridiculous sweater you got on right now.
It goes almost to your ankles.
Yeah, oh my god. Yeah, I saw a lot of Halloween costumes last year of, like, the Rose family, because they all have such distinctive styles of dressing, and it makes it very fun.
I didn't know that those were the costumes I was seeing, but in retrospect, I'm like, oh, that... I saw someone as a wigwall, and I'm like, oh, that's really funny.
That's amazing.
Oh my god,
like, if we have Halloween again, I the whole show and the whole cast of characters are just fuel for Halloween fodder.
I mean, I would say 90% of my closet is Stevie clothes, so.
Oh, Stevie, We shouldn't talk about Stevie and David. Well, Quinn, you mentioned that they have a boinking episode after they both get drunk. And
no, they get high.
But it's not played like for regretsies. Oh no, like a typical sitcom. But at some point, they accidentally sort of end up in a throuple or an open relationship situation.
Oh my god, what's that guy's name?
Jake.
Thank you.
They both, I think they see him at a party or something, and they both are attracted to him. And then he's so hot. And Jake is the most free character in this whole show. We barely know anything about him. He makes tables, I think, is established at one point. I don't know. He's a free spirit.
He makes tables and walks around shirtless.
Yeah, he has more joy than any of us will ever feel. But and then they both end up kissing him at the party, and then they both end up hooking up with him, and then unbeknownst to each other are like continuing to see him. And he thinks he's not two-timing them. He's just like, this is great. Dating a bunch of people, like, who cares, we're all having fun here. And like then it's just because Stevie and David are friends, they're like, we can't sleep with the same person, can we?
And then later he comes back and does he kiss Patrick? Is that what I'm
he basically invites them to an orgy implied. And then they're both like both David and Patrick are trying to not let the other person know that they're into that idea, but are like kind of into that idea. And then they run into Stevie at the pre-orgy party, and they're like, we gotta go leave.
Yeah, there's no like kink shaming or anything like that. Like, or you know, Jake is played for laughs because he is just so silly and happy all the time.
I wish I could be that confident in my sexuality and just like walk up to people and be like, hey.
Yeah, even though he and David stop dating whenever he sees David, he kisses him on the lips, and it's like, oh yep, okay, this is happening. And I really like, well, I said like open relationship / throuple, because Jake assumes that just everybody is, he doesn't assume consent, but he just assumes that everybody's okay with like having relationships with one another and loving each other, and it's so weird and delightful. And I think that's also why I didn't like him at first. Like, there's a bit of resentment because of the joy in his heart that I know I'll never, and the lack of anxiety that I know I will never be able to feel that. So the whole orgy thing is, that's also kind of alluded to, like, because Patrick, David's partner and spoiler husband later on, has never been with a man except for David. And at one point, David even brings up, listen, there's this guy who's been flirting with you, why don't you go on a date with him, see where things go, because I don't want this conversation to happen 5 years down the road. Which is, one, really cute, because David thinks that they'll be together in 5 years, which they are, and two, because David is realistic and open about the fact, like, you were he doesn't say like you were in the closet, but it's like, listen, you've never been with another guy, go do this. And the show doesn't make it seem like he's not anxious about it, because of course he's anxious. Like, his boyfriend is out with another dude, and up until that point they've been monogamous. So he's, you know, just he's anxious because not just from like the my boyfriend might fuck another dude, but from the, oh, my boyfriend who I realize now that I love is hanging out with this hot guy. And that's another thing that isn't on TV often in like the in the way of like no drama comes of it. It ends up like it's like, oh, David, I couldn't do it, aka like I couldn't sleep with this dude. Does he actually go on a date with him? I forget what happens.
Yeah, he goes on the date, but he doesn't sleep with him.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Oh, because they make fun of his squared off shoes. Right, right. But the conflict is resolved in just, or rather, there is no conflict. It is just resolved in like, hey, this isn't for me. And I really like, though, that Patrick is like, should I explore my kinky side? And then it's like, I did, and not for me. Like, I don't want to go to an orgy, and I don't want to fuck this nice man who just has really bad taste in shoes. What, Quinn, you said that you are fond of Patrick. Why?
I'm gathering my emotions. So, I become extremely attached to television characters that I love. And because I love David so much, like, as soon as I saw Patrick and knew that they were, like, heading towards a relationship and that Patrick made David happy, then I was like, I love you. and I also just, like, love the, and I just love the character of Patrick because I think that he represents like something new in the show. Like, I feel like once he arrived, the show was like complete. And he's coming from a different background than David is, and he has like way different life experiences. But they both complement each other so well, and they both like accept each other so completely, and like help each other deal with their kind of baggage that they're bringing in different ways. And like they have realistic conflicts and arguments, but they always like come back together and resolve them. And he sings and he does like a romantic gesture through a song, which is a perfect, and that's what everyone should do all the time. Mm-hmm. And it just makes my heart really happy. And I like that they tease each other a lot. One of my favorite little bits in the show is when Stevie and Patrick are talking and then David shows up and there's some kind of scene and then David has to go again and he's they're saying that he doesn't compromise, he can't compromise, and then David has to leave again. He's like, are you just two just gonna stay here and swap stories about how I don't compromise? And they're like, yes.
Yeah, the plungers. He doesn't want the plungers at the front of the store.
Who would want plungers at the front of, it just doesn't make sense. Like,
I was trying to contextualize, Alex.
I'm sorry, it's so bad. It was such a bad idea. Matthew?
But they're just so cute together, and they're so realistic as a couple in their sort of ups and downs and the day-to-day teasing, and I just want them to be happy forever.
I mean, technically they ended up happy together forever because the show ended, so.
Yay. Did you guys watch the they did a little bonus thing for charity with Mariah Carey.
We just watched that today.
Yeah. The cast did a cute thing. In the show, David is obsessed with Mariah Carey. And so they did a cute thing where Mariah Carey shows up. But there was a moment where they like establish that David and Patrick are definitely in the same house. They're just calling in from different rooms.
Yes.
Which I liked that.
That was freaking adorable. We will link that in the show notes. The next thing I have in my notes is, and Quinn just brought this up, was Patrick serenades David.
Wait, I want to know what you think about Patrick.
What I think about Patrick?
Yes. I mean, I know what you think, but the people who are giving us money don't know, and I think they should know.
I think he's a perfect little soft bean, and I want to give him a hug. Like, he's like very, when he's talking to Stevie, like Quinn mentioned, he's very like snarky and they give like David a hard time, but he's really just like very sweet and a soft boy and very emotional, and I don't know, I love it.
He's you.
No. He's much more attractive.
No, disagree. Ugh, but his, well,
and also I can't play the guitar or sing like that, so. But
again, disagree, yeah,
I don't
fine.
I don't know. I love him. He's perfect. He is, like Quinn said, he's like the perfect balance to David, because he calls David on his bullshit. Like, David is very over the top and dramatic, and Patrick is like has this calming effect on him and is, you know, the yin to his yang, if I'm going to be like that cliche, because he is very grounded and down to earth where David is not. And I think that I just like that he brings that to the show. Like, I would want to be his best friend. I would want to talk shit about David with him and like hang out and go to his open mic nights. So,
oh, and another thing about Patrick that I think is pretty subtle most of the time, but is really well done, is that he's a lot more traditionally masculine than David is. Like, the way that he dresses would like read as straight most of the time. And he's like really into baseball and sports and like a lot of these ideas of what is considered more traditionally masculine. But he never is like threatened about it, and I don't think there's ever any point where he like considers being gay like threatening to his masculinity at all, and he's still able to be like sensitive and a kind partner without that ever, like, they never show that in any kind of conflict with him like also being really into baseball and stuff like that. And oftentimes that's like kind of an easy cheap joke for comedies, and I don't think they ever do anything like that, which is appreciated.
As the show goes on, though, if you notice, his jeans get tighter and his button-ups get more and more unbuttoned.
They do.
It's the little things.
I would like to think that's for us as the audience, not for anyone else.
As soon as Patrick showed up in the show, I was worried because, I mean, instantly you're like, oh, these two are definitely going to end up together. But because he could pass as straight, I thought that was going to be the same old cliche of who's the wife, who's the husband. But no, he is healthy masculinity, the character. Like, whenever he does something, I guess wrong, or like any conflict in their relationship is never about the typical like, oh, you just don't want to do that because you're ashamed of being gay. Like, at one point, there's an episode where he was he married, or did he have a he accidentally runs into his fiance, and you think that like this is going to be a season's long situation, it's gonna end up like Ross and Rachel, but no, it's like this is extremely awkward and it sucks and they have a fight about it, but it's not because like he's ashamed of his past. He's just like, yeah, this is this weird thing. Like, he's ashamed, but not because he was with a woman or that he is gay. It's just he's a confused soft boy. And I keep also going back to the sports episode, and I typically hate like kind of like sports episodes that are like bottle episodes, you know, where like the whole thing is based around like the big game or something, but this is done so well. That episode is really like healthy masculinity, the episode. I don't know. There are so many things that I can't really pin down because it feels so fresh and so new and so clean. That's a commercial and a joke that fell off a cliff because I couldn't remember the rest of the jingle.
Dan Levy also said that he never wanted to have like an episode of the show in general where there's those sitcom tropes of like miscommunications and everything has been solved by two characters talking to each other. And that's why, like, the drama when Patrick and David break up the first time is, like, really palpable and real. And they actually take, like, the time and space to, like, talk things through, like, adults. As opposed to, like, if you would have just picked up the phone and called, it could have all been fixed, you know? But it's like that with, like, every character. Which is why when it was listed as a sitcom, I was like, no, this is incorrect.
I was wondering why you pushed back against the idea of it being a sitcom, because I'm like, it is, but like literally it's a situational comedy. But yeah, no, you're totally right. Like, it is a dramedy in that the drama is real, or rather, like, relatable, as are the comedic moments. I just explained what situational comedy was, and I apologize. I was talking to myself, and then I'm like,
explaining.
I'll explain that so hard. I wonder who's the David and who's the Patrick in this relationship. I don't know. Maybe that's also why I have very strong feelings about Patrick.
Wait, can that be the new who's the man and who's the woman? Who's the David and who's the Patrick?
Yes.
Let's just buy you a closet of oversized sweaters, Alex.
I mean, I do, but they're oversized podcast sweatshirts, really.
Not as fashionable, sorry.
I know, I'm trying. I need to get some fancy rings.
The last two things I have... Patrick coming out later in life in the episode where they, like, talk to his parents. And I have the proposal episode. And then I have... I don't know if, Quinn, did you watch the, like, little documentary thing kind of after they did the show?
I actually haven't watched that.
Oh. They talk about in that, which I didn't even think about, how Moira's like a giant gay icon, which I didn't even think about, but we can skip that if, yeah.
I mean, she is a adult Lady Gaga, sort of, in fashion, rather. But that is something I didn't think of either, but I'm not a gay man. So, like, that makes sense. But afterwards, I was like, oh, yay, I'm so glad. Then there's clips of a Moira drag show, and it's amazing.
That sounds really fun.
We will also put that in the notes, because it is very amazing. Is there anything we haven't talked about that you want to talk about? Besides, we should definitely... I am addressing that at Quinn. No offense, Alex.
No, I know, I know.
Yes. I'm just really excited to talk about Patrick and his parents and the proposal.
Yep, that's the last thing I have. So let's do it.
So we've talked a bunch about how that, like, homophobia doesn't really exist in this show. And... this is the one episode where it seems like it's going to, and it's really scary for a couple of scenes, because that's, like, by sort of, not because this show would do that to you, but because, like, that's what all of television has taught us to expect, is that, so, mm-hmm. David is throwing Patrick a surprise party, and he's invited his parents, but he does not know that Patrick has not actually come out to his parents, and he's not told them that David is his boyfriend. David has talked to Patrick's parents a ton, but they apparently this entire time have thought that they were just friends and business partners. And I'm going to get emotional talking about this episode, but basically David... So, and then they find out by accident, like at the beginning of the episode, that they're together, because no one knows it's supposed to be a secret. And then David goes to talk to them and finds out really early on that they're not upset at all that Patrick is dating a man. They're just really confused and sad that he didn't feel like he could tell them. And that is sort of what unfolds for the rest of the episode.
Can I just say that this episode made me cry, and, like, it is very hard to make me cry. I cry maybe 3 times a year since starting testosterone, and this episode, this and the two musical episodes where Tina Turner is played really got me. So, and I can hear Alex crying.
I am not crying. I don't know if I've ever talked about, like, coming out on this show, really, because it's not, like, unlike a lot of folks, it's not, like, really part of my, like the literal coming out part. You know, you come out many times in life, in many different ways, but the way that Patrick's parents react is very much how mine did, in that they also knew that I was queer before I did, because they're my parents, and it hurt my mom that I didn't tell her, and I would have never thought that. And then to see that on TV, oh my God, like, what in the world? How does this exist in, well, I know, because Canada. But not only their acceptance, but the fact that even after everybody knows, except for Patrick, like the Rose family, they all know that Patrick's parents are fine with him being gay, totally supportive. But they're all like, it's not our story to tell. So we're going to let Patrick, let us know when he is ready. And that is another really powerful thing, I think, for a not just your partner and your community, but your parents to also know that that is your story is super important and not something we get to see.
And the conversation that David and Patrick have in between David finding out everything and Patrick going and talking to his parents is another moment where David tells Patrick that he has invited his parents there, that he's figured out that Patrick hadn't told them, and he doesn't tell him that he's talked to his parents already, that he knows that they're going to accept him. But they have this really special moment where, like, obviously David is hurt on one level that his partner's parents didn't know about him, really, but he also, like, understands how deeply personal and difficult it is that mm-hmm. he doesn't make Patrick feel bad about it for a second. He is only there to support him through that conversation and to support him into fully coming out to his family.
It is just the perfect queer utopia. Like, it is a place I want to pack up and move to.
And utopia in the sense of, like, a literal sense of the world's word, because it's not that everything is perfect, but everything is ideal to me, I guess, because guess what? David is a human being who can both be hurt and support his partner at the same time. Like, there's nuance without being pretentious. And as a millennial who went to art school, that is just something I am used to and put into my own work, quite frankly, for the worst, unfortunately. And it's like, oh no, right. People contain multitudes and can at once.
I just think it's the most accurate and pure representation of a queer couple in television that I've ever seen.
Yeah. And I don't know if it's because you and I watched it both, you know, as a couple together during a stressful time in our lives, and some of the parallels that we have to the gay characters, but it felt like anybody could watch this story and relate to it, even in the best of times and the worst of times, and in wherever you are on the gender or sexuality spectrum, that big old alphabet web, it's like, this is a human relationship and not a gay relationship.
Which is what more shows need to do. Like, this is a great follow-up to our talk about bi representation and erasure, because this is what all of those shows need to learn from, like, to move forward.
Do we have any... Quinn, do you have any closing thoughts, feelings, concerns?
I love them all so much. And, no, okay, my genuine closing thoughts are that this show absolutely deserves all of the praise that it's gotten, and it's been nominated for, like, 100 Emmys, and yeah. So I'm really, really excited about, and so I hope...
Cough, 15.
What? Okay,
thank you for coming in with the fact-checking, but that's a lot of Emmys.
It's a lot.
I only discovered this show, or, like, I only started watching this show, like, barely a year and a half ago, and in that time, like, it's just camped out a place in my heart, and is going to be one of the shows that I return to again and again, as I already have. And especially these moments between Patrick and David, partially because it is this, like, beautiful gay relationship that resonates with me, but also just because it's one of the best relationships that I've ever seen on TV, and that I care about them as people and as a couple so much that I want to watch mm-hmm. them sing at each other over and over again. And that is special for any context, and I love that this time around it was this beautiful queer representation at the same time.
Matthew?
Oh, I was just going to say, Quinn said that so beautifully. The only thing we left, the only thing I feel like we left out is the fact that Patrick, like, comes out as gay so much later in life is definitely something I needed in me. I needed, like, 3 years ago, but having it now is also, like, perfect and good. And I don't know, I feel like there's so much about this show that just touches my heart because it is so wholesome, and it's because the relationships, whether they're family or romantic relationships, are so well developed and fleshed out, and all of the characters are just like genuinely good people, that the representation is just like the cherry on top, you know?
Even if you're hearing this and thinking, okay, you all are just fangirling over positive representation, one, you're
first of all fan-personing. Right. How dare you assume our gender?
Canceled. Well, but even though I'm canceled, you should still watch this show because we've barely touched on all of the other characters. Like we didn't talk about Twyla, who is the embodiment of wholesome, is a, like, oh god, what an angel. And played by, oh my goodness, I don't remember her name, but she's another Levy.
Sarah Levy.
Thank you, Levy. Wow. Sarah, damn. The thing about this show, for me at least, is like Rent, I feel like I'm always going to remember the situation and the time at which I watched it initially, even though I've already also returned to it many times. And it's already been really formative on my adult life, literally in the single month since I've seen it. And I know that it kind of got sort of a late start in terms of its fandom, but I can only hope because of the, what, 16 Emmys? 15 Emmys?
15.
15, my goodness. I really hope that more folks discover this, and I also hope that the Levy, the Canadian family, who is truly a national and now I hope international treasure, get to make more things together. All right, everybody, thank you again so much for tuning in to this episode of Opposite Sides of the Couch. If you somehow found the audio of this without supporting our Patreon, Maddie's not mad, I am. But you can find the main podcast at twoheadedgirlfm.com and the actual Patreon at patreon.com/twoheadedgirlfm. And also, Quinn, thank you for continuing to be on our show and work with us and put up with us as human beings. And by us, I mean me.
I love to be here in these private gay episodes of The Incomparable. Speak the language of love like you know what it means. And it can't be wrong. Take my heart and make it strong, babe. Cause you're simply the best. Better than all the rest. Better than anyone. Anyone I've ever met. And I'm stuck on your heart. I hang on every word you say. Tear us apart. Baby, I'd rather be dead.
Clean this up before you get comfy, okay?
Yes. Sorry for all the background noise, but if you have made it to the end of this episode and actually listened through, congratulations. And as a reward, you get to hear Matthew do his Moira Rose impression.
Oh no, why did you do that, David?
No, you can do better than that.
Baby.
Full sentence.
I don't have a full sentence. Francis, why did you do that? He's a baby.